and welcome to DNA Today. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. DNA Today informs you on what's happening in the genetic world. The show is packed with news stories, lessons, all to keep you updated and educated on the ever-changing world of genetics. And you can tune in Mondays at 11:30 a.m. to hear me live on WHUS.org or on the radio, 91.7 FM. And today is a very special episode. I am joined by a special guest, Maddie. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on. We're really excited to hear what you have to say about the Immune Deficiency Foundation and your own foundation of Maddie's Herd. You're an active advocate with the foundation, and you have primary immune deficiency disorder, which is kind of why you're so involved with this. So why don't we start out by learning about primary immune deficiency disorder and kind of just learning what life is like with it and everything.
Okay, well, to be specific, I have common variable immune deficiency, which basically means that out of the five immune proteins that your body has, only two of mine work or even exist, really. So basically, with all primary immune deficiencies, there is some level of immunity missing in a person's body, whether that means that it's a mutation, they're missing a protein, they've somehow lost a protein, in whatever way their body's just not creating the right antibodies and immunities. So when the easiest thing to compare it to, I guess, would be bubble boy disease, because that is a step above what I have. So it's just basically you're sick all the time, and it's incredibly draining because your body has to work, you know, so many more times as hard as anybody with, you know, a healthy immune system to keep yourself in an even slightly healthy state. So as of now, I'm on immune globulin treatments once a month. I have an IV of immune globulin. The whole process takes about 6 hours. It's quite unpleasant. It's the same side effects as like a chemotherapy with a lot of the same attributes. So all in all, it's a pretty bad disease to have. Yeah. It's hard. You're very depleted all the time. It's exhausting, really, based on, like, just because of all the internal work that your body's doing. And then in general, you're sick on top of a lot of things. So living with it is incredibly challenging, and getting diagnosed is almost as challenging.
So walk us through your diagnosis and the process of that, when that started and finally getting to your diagnosis.
All right, well, I was sick like all of the time as a kid. I had an ear infection for almost 3 straight years of my life.
Wow.
Without interruptions. Yeah, without interruptions. And it was just a lot of strep throat, a lot of sinus infections, a lot of ear infections. Basically infections, that was the big word. And for a long time, my mom was like, okay, but is there something wrong with her immune system? Because she seems to get everything. And my doctors were reassuring. They, you know, told us that it was okay and it was normal and that I was just, you know, on the weaker side of the immune spectrum. I was pretty solid till about 10 years old, and I started getting really sick to the point where I had Lyme's disease. I was put on medication for over 100 days, didn't really help. I was still sick. I battled a lot of different things. I had like a myriad of infections at the time. I had had quite a few hospital stays for things that never really resolved, were just kind of like, okay, you need to go home now. And it wasn't until I was 12, so 2011, that I was finally looked at by an immunologist. I believe that was at Boston Children's Hospital.
Okay. Yep.
That was when I was diagnosed with hypogammaglobulinemia, which is basically a deficiency in the G and T cells, I believe, mm-hmm. of the immune system. So you still have like 3/5 of an immune system, but
just not as much as a healthy person's immune system has.
Right.
You have less.
Okay. Right. So you would have like quite a bit less. And so I lived with that diagnosis for, I want to say, a year. And I started subcutaneous immune globulin treatments, which is the same medicine as the IV, just it's once a week, and you have to do needles like a diabetic would with insulin, so okay. right in the layer of fat around your stomach.
So that's a little bit more regular, and you have to take care of it more.
And I had to do it myself, which was really quite unpleasant as like as like a 12 or 13 year old, just like sticking myself once a week was kind of gross. And then you get like pockets of the fluid. It's nasty. But so I lived with that diagnosis for like a year. My infection rate was still pretty high. It was my actual like blood levels were still pretty low. It was no real remarkable difference. And that is when they started to look at CVID, so common variable immune deficiency. That is the second like worst, I guess you could say, primary immune deficiency. There's like 82 subtypes of every bracket of immune deficiency.
Which makes it then rare because there's so many different types of immune.
And because everyone's is going to be different. Because it is a genetic mutation, meaning that everybody's mutation is going to be like slightly a little more crooked or, you know, broken, just whatever it may be. And so it took a really long time for me to get diagnosed with the CVID just because I had a lot of other health concerns going on, and distinguishing what was symptoms contributed to an immune disorder versus whatever else was going on was a very challenging process. But I've been on IV treatments, which are stronger than the subcutaneous, for I think a year, maybe a little bit over that. And those have been incredibly helpful. I'm still not healthy, but I'm much, much better off than I was a few years ago. And I'm really enjoying this kind of upswing. It's nice.
So you're having, you're getting sick less because of this treatment.
Right. So I don't have as many infections. I still get a lot of viruses. I'm still kind of overall just meh, if that's an adjective.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
just quite lethargic, I guess, would be the word. But I'm definitely a lot less sick and a lot less acutely ill. Like, for a very long time, I had trouble with my kidneys, and, like, I bruised my kidneys. I had issues with my liver and my spleen. They're pretty enlarged, so I have a lot of concerns as to like their function and all of that. So as of now, all of that has kind of plateaued, which is really nice. There's some new things that we're looking at, but you know, all in all, I have a lot less diagnoses thrown at me right now, which is fairly comforting.
That is. And just coming from all of this, you're really strong for going through all of this.
Thank you.
And being, you know, such an inspiration to other kids with rare disorders and just kids in general. I mean, you're really, you have this disorder and you're out there being an advocate. You went to Capitol Hill not once, but twice.
Yeah.
And so really tell us about this. Tell us about the bill that you were supporting and your efforts there.
So the bill that I was supporting was H.R. 460 and H.R. 1600, which were basically the same act. And what they were doing is fighting to keep biologic medications, so medications that I would use and people with diseases like ALS, different cancers, rheumatoid arthritis, a lot of like lupus even.
Okay.
These are medications that people with these diseases would use. And we were fighting to keep them in a co-pay, not a co-insurance. And basically what that means is that with a co-pay in insurance terms, there is a flat rate at which you stop paying for a treatment and your insurance company takes over and they'll pay the rest of it. So say a treatment is $100, which is nowhere near how much it costs, but it's easy to say. You could pay $75, they would have to pay $25 once you reach $75. So what insurance companies have been trying to do is move biologic medications, so medications that have no generic alternative. There's no over-the-counter.
You have to buy the brand name.
Yeah, okay. It has to
Which is usually more expensive.
Absolutely. It's a human supplement. Like, it's not something you can just go and get at a health food store. It's a pretty serious medication. And what they're trying to do is move it into its own tier of medication, so they become tier fours, which makes them a co-insurance, meaning that instead of paying 75 or instead of like you paying $75 and them 25, it would be them you paying 75% and them 25. And the issue with that is that the prices fluctuate so often that there are virtually no ways to save up for the amount of money that you'll have to spend. There's no way to put away enough money and still have a disposable income. You know, mm-hmm. there's no like definite price that you're going to have to pay. So as you get money throughout the year, you can't put away a couple hundred to thousands of dollars and just say, okay, this is medication money. Now I have this. You have to have a much more loosely based savings, which, you know, it really is detrimental to the quality of life that these people can have, because as much as you obviously won't get to go on cool vacations, which is really sad, there are also situations where people have ended up not being able to go to colleges that they wanted to, and not being able to even pay for food, and, you know, deciding which child gets the treatment which month, because there are families with more than one child with this disease.
Especially if it's genetic.
Exactly. So we basically talked to Congress people to have them, we were lobbying to have them sign off on this bill and get them to support it, bring it to Congress and say, hey, like, this is something that needs to happen. These people deserve a quality of life. And it costs them only $3 a year to keep it in a copay.
Wow. Compared to, you're talking thousands.
Oh, and mine is about $10,000 a month, I think.
$10,000 a month?
Yeah.
That's huge.
It's something like that, yeah.
And for people of various backgrounds, it's genetic, so it's affecting lots of different exactly. types of people, exactly. different incomes that really can't. $10,000 a month, like, that's, yeah. that's way more than even colleges, and people can't
exactly.
afford college. Yeah,
exactly.
That's huge.
So it's a pretty big deal. It was really, really humbling, honestly, to go and talk about it, because I wasn't talking about only myself, and I kind of realized that partway through the first trip I went on, mm-hmm. was that as much as this was going to affect my day-to-day life, it was going to affect so many others as well.
And just being a representative for people that have yeah. similar disorders to you, that you can really be an advocate for them.
Yeah, definitely. That's when that was honestly the turning point for me, I think, was realizing that it wasn't only me, and that kind of got me out of that really moody, I don't want to talk about it, like, leave me alone, that super angsty place, and it opened my eyes, and that's what inspired me to start working towards, you know, it's not really cured, so I guess you could say.
But just advancements in,
yeah,
in policy
and awareness, getting people to know what's going on, getting people to know what's going on with their bodies, helping people who aren't yet diagnosed, like mm-hmm. all of those things are very important to me. And I truly consider that my turning point into that.
So then how did you get involved with the foundation at an early age? You're 16 now. You
yeah.
started at what age with the foundation?
I started in 8th grade. So, 13,
14-ish,
I
want to
say.
Yeah.
it's kind of a blur. And my mom actually found them after I was diagnosed. She was doing research online, and she found the Immune Deficiency Foundation, because what they do is they help connect with the best doctors in the world for whatever specific condition you have. They connect parents and kids who are going through similar things. They, you know, do reviews of doctors, do reviews of treatments, link you to cheapest treatments and, you know, the different materials they can use, different needles, different pumps, different, like.
Wow, so really the resource for everything for
right.
parents that
right.
find this out and they're like, I don't know what to do about my child, or people
yeah.
that find out later in life.
They even have, like, manuals on how to deal with schools who are,
wow.
like, having trouble helping your kid get through education because, you know, we miss a lot of school.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible resource to look through. My mom found them after seeing a poster in the airport, actually, for immune disorders.
That's kind of a different way to find them.
Yeah.
Like, kind of a little, like, movie almost.
Yeah,
like.
And then doing research, and she got connected with them, realized that this is probably what I have, and that kind of started the whole diagnosis process.
Mm-hmm.
And as it was confirmed that I was part of this community, we became more and more in touch with them. We wanted to do more and more. And then I finally, when I realized that it wasn't just me, I decided I wanted to raise money, and I decided I wanted to really get the word out there more than just saying it to people, you know, who asked me about it. I would like to initiate the conversation about it. So I started the Maddie's Herd. I started Maddie's Herd when I was 13, which is a branch off of the Immune Deficiency Foundation. And basically what Maddie's Herd does is I host fundraisers. I run, like, I do 5Ks. I have different things, like fairs, all of that kind of stuff. Anything you can really think of that's a typical fundraiser, I will do. And what I do with the proceeds is I'll send them to the Immune Deficiency Foundation. And all of that money goes towards research for cures for immune deficiencies and funding families to go out. And so when they are invited to national conferences, like the one in New Orleans that I'm going to, or the ones in Washington, D.C., they'll be able to get out there, like, without having to spend as much money. So once I reach a certain amount, I get to go for free. And then what I do is all of the money after that, I would give to another family so that they can hopefully go for free, or at least at a discount cost. So I give money to people so they can find out what's going on in a really, like,
and connect with people like terms. Them.
Yeah. Because even the connection, you really, as much as the online resource has been incredible, there is just something about seeing someone with your condition, like, looking them in the eyes and saying, like, I'm not alone. Like, you're a legitimate person. You're here with me, and we're going to learn about different materials, different options for us while sitting in this conference. But then we also get to go to museums around the corner.
And just create a relationship that it's not all focused on the disorder, just learning about them as a person.
Absolutely. And it just, it's incredible. So I guess that was how I started that.
Yeah. So tell me about, you're going to New Orleans in a couple weeks. What are you up to down there?
I'm going down there for the national conference, which just means that we are going to sit, and there's going to be a lot of presentations by companies like Baxter and Pfizer, who are going to basically show off their products, different treatment options with different medications, different materials for medications. We're going to talk about, you know, new things from the IDF, different social media accounts that they're going through. And then I'm actually kicking off a Pi for PI challenge through social media, that it's going to start there, where basically it's going to be like the ice bucket challenge, and to raise awareness for primary immune disorders by throwing pies in people's faces, just for, like, you know, just for fun. And while I'm there, I'm going to get to meet a bunch of my friends from the IDF, people my age, people in, like, their 50s with this disorder, and I'm just going to bond, and it's going to be amazing. Like, I'm just going to learn about my disease and what I can do to get the word out there, and, you know, how I can make my life better, including everybody else's.
Definitely. And so are these similar people that you went to, or some of the same people that you went to when you went to Capitol Hill?
Yeah.
That you went with 50 other people when you went back, you went in May?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So you'll see a lot of the same people.
I'll see a lot of the same people, and then also a lot of different people, because more people go to the national conferences because it's a more holistic experience, where the Washington, D.C., the Capitol Hill was a lot more based on lobbying and, you know, really getting stuff done, whereas the national conferences are quite a bit more laid back, and it's more about receiving information as opposed to giving it. So a lot of, and kids get to hang out, and we get to go do things. They have trips planned for us, like they rent out museums so we can go and hang out, and then we can see baseball games. We've done a lot of really, really cool things. It's an experience based on every aspect of life as opposed to just getting the word out for PI. So a lot more people will come to that, and I'll get to see, hopefully meet new people, see some people that I've met only like once or twice, and I'm really excited.
That's awesome. And another big event that you were part of was the walk on Brooklyn Bridge in Lower Manhattan. So
yeah, that
how
was awesome.
That? And you were there as part of Maddie's Herd?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was really fun. I love New York City, so that was...
It's an exciting place to be.
My absolute favorite. Oh, absolutely. It's my favorite place in the whole world. So I had a big group of my friends and my family come to represent Maddie's Herd, and it was a walk for the Immune Deficiency Foundation, just a regular, like, 5K. And what we did was we walked across the Brooklyn Bridge. We held signs. We wore our Maddie's Herd T-shirts and Maddie's Herd bracelets and, like, everything. And we just enjoyed the day while getting the message out there. And, you know, anybody who asked us questions that passed us, we answered. And it was really laid back, but I really appreciate the way that you can get the word out and you can do so much while doing so little.
Yeah, and with that, you come across people that are walking on the bridge because it's an attraction in New York City, so a lot of people do it. And you tell one person, and then they tell another, and it's the whole ripple effect that one walk can really inform hundreds and, you know.
Yeah,
definitely. And another really cool thing that you got to do was meet Ed Sheeran.
that is
pretty cool.
So
you went to his concert here in Connecticut.
Yeah.
And it was through the Do It For The Love Foundation that they set it up for you. And it was a surprise, right? You didn't know it was going to happen.
I had no idea.
So did you know you were going to the concert, or how much did you know?
I literally knew nothing.
Nothing.
I knew that I had plans that day. So a while back, I was approached by the Genies, and I qualify for a wish from the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And so for the longest time, I was going between, you know, meeting Ed Sheeran and meeting John Green, and I was like, I don't know what to do.
It's a tough choice.
Very tough choice. And so apparently my mom got in touch with someone she knows from the Genies, and they said, for music, go and do the Do It For The Love Foundation. Mm-hmm. So what they did was essentially grant me a wish, and so I got to go to the concert cost-free for me. I was told that morning, I sobbed, I really cried. And I met them at Mohegan Sun later that night, and that's when it all happened. I got to meet him in a separate group from the regular meet and greet. I was pushed all the way to the back so I could spend the most time with him. I got to spend, 15 straight minutes with him.
Wow.
As opposed to, 30 seconds.
Right.
So that was absolutely life-changing. I love him, beyond words. My little, teenager fangirl heart was just dying.
Oh, definitely. When I found out that you met Ed Sheeran, I was jealous. I was like, wow, that you know, that's pretty cool, I have to say. I was fangirling a little bit. I get to meet someone who met Ed Sheeran.
He was amazing. And so I walked in, and I was just in tears. And I was explaining to him how much he meant to me, and he just kept hugging me, and he was so sincere and so kind. And then I gave him a package from Maddie's Herd with a t-shirt and a bracelet in it, and he actually sat there and opened it and talked to me about what the t-shirt is and what the foundation is and what I do. And he actually ended up wearing the bracelet, on stage.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's exciting. So I want a bracelet. Where can I get a bracelet now?
Actually, on my website.
On your website. Okay.
On the Facebook page, there are links. You can get the exact same one that he wore, which is
That is pretty cool.
My heart.
Wow. So, and you also got to hold his guitar?
Yeah. I was walking. Okay. So after I met him, when I had kind of restabilized.
A little bit, right?
Yeah. A little, not fully. I walked, and we actually came out from backstage, and so we got to pass where all of his guitars are and the guy who was standing there tuning them. And so I asked if I could have a picture with it, and I literally just meant in front of it. Mm-hmm. I had no intention of let me hold his guitar. And this guy just goes, okay, and he puts it around my neck, and I was freaking
out. You're don't drop it, drop it. Even though it's kind of a beat up, cool looking guitar.
They can't see it, but my face is eternally smiling, and and so I got to sit there and I got to hold it, and he gave me a guitar pick, and
you got to strum a little bit.
Yeah, I got to stand there, and then we walked through, and I had no idea where we were sitting. I genuinely knew nothing about what was going
that
on.
That makes it more exciting, though,
absolutely,
because you're
and so then I found out I was fifth row. So I got to watch the concert from the fifth row on the floor, just like right there, and it was just a life-changing experience. I got Ed to actually write my tattoo, a tattoo that I want.
Oh, wow.
In his handwriting, so I have that, and it's just, it was
That'll be another incredible. Exciting day when you can get the tattoo.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just very, very emotional talking about it. It was incredible, and it's moments like that that really reinstill my positivity, because, I mean, it's obviously really easy to be like, my life really sucks, because in a lot of ways it does, and it can, but there are so many people out there who are so willing to just help and just be so kind and considerate. Like, the Do It for the Love Foundation in no way needed to, like, grant me a wish and have me meet this man for free, but they did, and they pulled it off, and, you know, on their own time. So it's just, it's incredibly humbling to have a group of people who are willing to help you. And as much as it was scary, almost, like, realizing you qualify for a wish, because it's one of those things, like, you want, but you also don't. Because when you have a wish, you're, like, excited because you get to have this thing happen and, you know, you deserve it, but on the other side, like, you deserve it.
Yeah, because you have this disorder,
right,
that's
and you kind of just realize just as much as, like, what's really at stake, and just how, like, the real enormity of your situation. But it was amazing.
And you have just so many strengths just going through this and having your own organization, and you're a very, very impressive young lady, I do have to say. And I want to kind of end with advice that you have for other kids with rare disorders, or parents out there that are finding out about this or not sure if they have a rare disorder, just kind of everything that you've been through, what you could kind of pass along to them.
One of my favorite quotes that I came up with a couple years ago in a particularly dark place was, "This is just a prologue." And I use that quote to remind myself that what I'm going through, what I'm dealing with, is not my story. It's the prologue. It is what a reader needs to hear about a character so they can understand where they're going and all that they've done, and just how impactful what they've done is. So I guess what I would say to these people is that it's just your prologue, and this is not all you are. This may be your platform for some things, and trust me, I fought that for a really long time. I wanted nothing to do with being sick. I wanted nothing to come from me being sick. I just didn't want it to be there. I wanted to do my own thing and, you know, not be good in spite of something or because of something. I wanted to just be good. And it took me a while to realize that I can be good and still be sick. And even being sick can be good in a way that I never thought possible. So I would just say, do research, go and look at things, be educated about your circumstance, you know, find your personal limits, because you're going to have doctors or your parents who say, like, you know, there are people with MS who run triathlons, but if you're tired that day, you can stay in bed. Like, it's okay to not always be that person, but as long as you do a little bit to either better you or people around you or both, then you're okay, and you're going to be okay. And just accept your limitations and work within them, because there's a lot more that you can do than you realize. My goal is to raise $50,000 before I graduate high school for the Immune Deficiency Foundation. And so far, I've raised $22,000 through Maddie's Herd. And so what I'd say to people struggling is that you have so much more potential than you realize. Like, when I started this foundation, I genuinely thought I was going to raise maybe hundreds of dollars. Like, I barely shot over 500, and realizing that in my first fundraiser alone, I raised almost 10,000 was,
wow,
it was incredible. And there's so many ways for you to create your platform and create your message that you do really just need to try it. And you just really need to believe that there is a possibility.
Definitely. I think that that's very well said. And people can go to facebook.com/TeamZebraMaddie'sHerd to look at everything you're doing. And really, that's really the hub for everything.
Yeah.
And also MaddiesHerd.com. And I'm sure there's ways to get in contact, donate, get a shirt, get that cool bracelet that Ed Sheeran has that now everybody wants.
And Maddie's also going to be featured in Nord's newsletter. You can visit Nord at rarediseases.org.
So thank you so much for being on the program,
of course,
and really appreciate just hearing all of this and being inspired by everything that you're going through and everything that you're working towards. It's really cool that you're 16 and already so accomplished. So that's very awesome. And people can go to dnapodcast.com and at dnapodcast at Twitter to learn more and see. You can listen to this episode again if you want to on there. And we'll have links if you forget any of this at dnapodcast.com. All of Maddie's links will be on there. So thanks for listening and join me next week to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.